Go 1.27 got a beautifully produced interactive tour from the Victoria Metrics team that scored 238 upvotes and generated 92 comments. For context, Victoria Metrics is a high-performance time series database written primarily in Go, so they have both the technical depth and the motivation to produce a comprehensive breakdown of what's new in the language. The tour format is the interesting choice here. It's not a changelog, it's an interactive walkthrough where readers can execute code in the browser as they learn.
The features themselves that are generating the most discussion. Improved range over function iterators, which were introduced experimentally in 1.22 and are now stabilized. Continued improvements to the toolchain's handling of generic type inference, and some genuinely practical additions to the standard library. The range over function thing sounds dry, but it's actually a significant ergonomic improvement for anyone writing iterators in Go. Previously, you had to either use channels or write custom iterator types with somewhat awkward call conventions.
The comment thread has the familiar Go community character, a mix of people who have been waiting years for these features and are genuinely pleased they're finally clean, and a contingent of Go skeptics who show up in every release thread to argue that the language is accumulating complexity without philosophical coherence. The skeptic position is less convincing than it used to be, honestly. The Go team's discipline on feature adoption has been unusual by modern standards. Things like generics took years longer to ship than the community wanted, precisely because they were waiting for a design they could commit to.
The documentation discussion connects here because the Diataxis framework hit 374 upvotes, the third highest score in today's feed, with 47 comments. Diataxis is a documentation architecture developed by Danielle Procida, and its core insight is that all documentation serves one of four distinct user needs. Tutorials, which are learning-oriented, how-to guides, which are task-oriented, reference material, which is information-oriented, and explanations, which are understanding-oriented. The framework argues that mixing these modes in a single document is the root cause of most documentation failure.
This is the kind of deceptively simple framework that, once you see it, you can't unsee it. Most documentation problems I've encountered, and I've read a lot of technical documentation over the years, come down to a writer conflating tutorial material with reference material, or trying to explain why in the middle of a how-to step sequence. Diataxis gives you a vocabulary for diagnosing those failures.
The HN comment thread is interesting because a lot of practitioners are describing how adopting Diataxis changed their team's documentation workflows. Several commenters note that the framework's value isn't just in the four-category taxonomy, but in what it implies structurally. You need four separate entry points into your documentation, not four sections in a single doc. The information architecture implications are real.
Now, here's where I want to drop in a bit of historical context that I think is underappreciated in the Diataxis conversation. The framework resonates so strongly right now, partly because so much documentation is being AI-generated. And AI-generated documentation has a specific failure mode. It's extremely good at producing text that reads like documentation without actually serving any of Diataxis's four user needs well. It's learned the surface pattern of technical writing without the underlying communicative intent. Diataxis gives human writers and editors a rubric for catching that.
The tailwind piece is going to be the most contested item in this segment. The post is titled, "Why I Don't Recommend Tailwind CSS," and it generated 101 upvotes and 106 comments, a comment-to-upvote ratio that signals genuine controversy. The author's argument is essentially that Tailwind optimizes for writing styles quickly at the cost of making styles hard to read, maintain, and reason about at scale. Utility classes, scattered throughout HTML, create a kind of implicit coupling between markup and presentation that violates the separation of concerns principle that CSS was designed around.
The counterarguments in the thread are forceful. The most compelling one, separation of concerns as a principle, was developed in an era when HTML and CSS were maintained by different people with different roles. In modern component-based architectures, where a single developer owns both the markup and the styles for a component, the traditional separation argument is weaker. If you're never going to change the HTML without changing the styles, or vice versa, keeping them in separate files isn't separation of concerns, it's just indirection.
Where the anti-tailwind position has teeth is on team scalability. When you have multiple developers working on the same code base, utility class soup in the HTML becomes genuinely hard to review in a pull request. A CSS class called CardHeader communicates design intent. A string of 17 Tailwind utilities communicates implementation. They're not the same thing. And at code review time, the difference matters.
The thread also surfaces a tooling point that I think often gets lost. Tailwind's purging mechanism, the part that removes unused classes from your production bundle, has historically been finicky and has caused production bugs when it incorrectly identifies dynamically constructed class strings as unused. This is a real operational concern, not just aesthetic preference.
Syncular also deserves a mention. It's an offline-first SQL sync library with TypeScript and Rust cores that a developer named Quambo posted to GitHub. The 16 upvotes and 8 comments are modest, but the technical approach is interesting. It's tackling the local-first software problem, which is the challenge of building applications that work seamlessly offline and then sync when connectivity is available. The split between a TypeScript interface layer and a Rust core for performance-sensitive sync logic is a pattern we're seeing increasingly in this space.
And the Elena library for progressive web components rounds out the developer tooling picture. It's a lightweight approach to building web components with a progressive enhancement philosophy. The components should degrade gracefully if JavaScript isn't available or fails to load. 35 upvotes and 3 comments suggests early-stage interest from a relatively niche audience.